And you'll be able to find some material already on the SCI portal, some preliminary lecture notes and some other resources there too. I'm just curious, how many of you have programmed in Python before? Okay, everyone. Okay, great. That's really good to hear. Okay, so let's just, the first lecture today is going to be mostly kind of motivation and overview for the course. So let me just start with a few questions to kind of get an idea of what you think about when you hear about machine learning. So let's start with that. What comes to your mind when you hear somebody say machine learning? Just anything.
Anything? Neural networks.
Oh, great. We have some people online. Awesome. How many people are on Zoom?
I think it might just be me.
Okay.
Cole.
Okay. Hi, Cole. Nice. Okay. Neural networks. Perfect. Yeah. I can't see who's on Zoom. So yeah, thanks for just speaking up. So yeah, neural networks. Awesome. What else? Just any, it doesn't have to be a definition. Just anything that's associated with machine learning in your mind.
ChatGPT.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. What else? Anything?
Layers.
Layers. Nice. I like that. Perfect. Layers.
Functional analysis.
Nice. Okay. Thanks, guys. Oh, cool. Oh, nice. Cool. Anything else? Of course, this is not an extensive list, but anything else you feel you want to add for now that just comes to your mind whenever you hear machine learning, what do you think of? Okay, no problem. So that's good. We're going to, of course, by the end of this course, we'll probably have a list of many hundred items that we could add here. But let's move on to another question. What are some applications of machine learning? What have you seen it used for? I mean, for example, I can put ChatGPT here from that previous list. Yeah, nice.
Prediction models,
yeah.
Generating synthetic data.
Nice, yeah. Awesome. What else? Try to think, you know, outside the realm of physics and math too, because we know machine learning is used for lots of things. Where else have you seen it used?
Computer vision.
Computer vision, nice. And I heard medical imaging too. Okay, so maybe I'll just list a couple others to just kind of grow the bubble of what we can think about, just to kind of emphasize that machine learning is used in many different areas, not just in physics. We can use it for art, playing games. So a few years ago, when people were just starting to talk about machine learning more broadly in this building, there was big news that some AlphaGo machine was able to beat a human at this really difficult game of Go. So we can use machine learning for many different things. Of course, we could grow this list very long. And in this course, we're gonna focus on how we can use machine learning for many body systems and phases of matter to learn about these things. Okay. So let me move to one more question. Does anybody know the difference between machine learning and artificial intelligence?
Learning kind of like a specific set of tools, but AI is like a much broader category.
Yeah, exactly. So I like to think of it as like a diagram like this. I have AI, machine learning is kind of a subfield of it. So AI is really any way that computers can can mimic intelligent behavior. Whereas machine learning is specifically, the essential part is this learning element. So in AI, we might explicitly give a computer some list of rules that could be very long, and it could seem quite intelligent and sophisticated, but in machine learning, we explicitly have this aspect of learning. But of course, a lot of the exciting AI applications are within this subfield of machine learning. Then we're going to talk about this in a lot more detail within this course, but we've already mentioned neural networks. So let me also just emphasize this is actually a subfield of machine learning. I'm not going to give a long definition here because this is going to be a huge part of this course. But you know, when you see, I already saw a lot of the key words said. When you see diagrams like this with a lot of layers and connections between them, something like this is what we mean by a neural network. And again, we're going to talk all about what you can do with this. And then when you hear someone say deep learning, here, when we say that the learning is deep, we really just mean that we're increasing the number of layers in these networks. So I just always like to start out with these definitions just because I think sometimes if you're reading things that you, sometimes you'll hear people kind of use these four terms somewhat interchangeably. So just to make it clear in your mind that although in many cases we're going to be talking about deep learning and it's a type of all of these things and there's not necessarily a problem with that, it's good to also just be aware of this substructure. Yeah, yeah.
Can you give some examples of things that are machine learning but not neural networks?
Like, yeah, we're going to see the lecture later today is going to be all about something called linear regression, which is an example. And we're going to see like a whole list of other algorithms. So the first, I think the like today, the second lecture, and a bit of the next lecture, we'll talk about some other algorithms. And then we're going to get into deep learning. Yeah. I always like when someone asks a question where I'm like, oh, it's the next lecture. I'm like, oh, so I somehow it's logical pedagogically. So that's good. OK, so now, let me just spend a few minutes kind of motivating why we want to think about the overlap between machine learning and many-body physics. So one way that I could summarize a major goal in machine learning is that we want to train computers based on data to recognize and characterize and detect features. Yeah. Whereas if I think about many body physics, one major goal I can think about is, if you think back to your statistical physics course, so we can think about many body physics as kind of trying to link the macroscopic and the microscopic. And so if we immediately kind of think of our macroscopic quantities that we might study as data and our macroscopic phenomena as these features that we're trying to study, we can sort of immediately see a connection between these two fields. Let me also just take a second to say what I mean when I say many body physics here, because it's kind of used a little bit vaguely in some situations. So in this course, what we mean by many body physics is cases where we fundamentally have to have many particles interacting. So for example, many body physics is needed if we want to describe things like high temperature superconductors, fractional quantum Hall effect, a lot of the effects that we see in quantum computers with many qubits. But it's not needed in systems if we have an effective single quasiparticle theory. So this, I don't know if this might be something that you'll study in the quantum matter course this is coming up, but in some cases there are some effective single quasiparticle theories where you don't fundamentally have to have many particles interacting in this effective theory. And in that case, those are not the type of problems where we're really going to need these methods such as machine learning in order to give us some new insights and kind of push the boundary of what we can learn. Okay, a little more is that, so the reason that we really need computational methods in this case is because solving the Schrodinger equation is going to become exponentially difficult as this number of particles, which is fundamental, increases. And so again, this is why we need some kind of numerical methods. Of course, machine learning is not the only choice. So some other methods available. I just wrote a few. I don't know if any of you have been using certain kinds of methods in this case that you particularly like. For myself, I've done a lot of work with Monte Carlo methods. And actually, we're also going to study Monte Carlo a little bit in this course. Are there other computational methods within that are used for many body physics that any of you have heard about we should add to this list?
No. Functional theory.
Mm-hmm. Nice, yeah. Nice. So again, we're not covering extensively all of these methods available. Partially, the reason why we're going to study Monte Carlo in this class is we're actually going to use it in some cases to generate our data, which we'll then analyze with machine learning. So that's kind of coming up. So what really sets machine learning apart from these other methods, or at least one thing that sets it apart, I would say, is that in all of these methods, you sort of have to start with some type of physical knowledge or a physical theory, and you use that to generate some data. Whereas in machine learning, we really start with data as our starting point. So in machine learning, we're really going to start with data and then use that to learn about some features. In this class, those features are often going to be phases of matter. But just to emphasize here, somebody mentioned that something we can use machine learning for is generating more data. This is also something we can do. But in this case, we're still going to kind of start with some data in order to train our models. And then in that case, we're going to use it to generate more data. Still, the starting point is going to be data in that case. Does anyone have any questions so far? Okay. So let me proceed to just kind of give you an overview of the types of machine learning methods. So the first one that we're going to spend kind of approximately the first half or so about half of the course talking about is supervised learning. Can somebody tell me what supervised learning is? Some of you had such great technical words to already say, so I'm sure you know. Yeah?
With the features that you're trying to find labeled, so you know, like,
yeah,
what you're trying to get.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. Yeah. So in this case, the notation I'm going to use, we have some data set, which is some pairs of coordinates. And what's really fundamental about supervised learning is that we have labels, which I'm calling y here. And our labels can have many components, or they might just be one single number. So the task machine learning is really to fit some function to these labels that you know for the data set that you're given. And really the structure of this function and the types of parameters that are contained with it that you can modify, that's really what defines your algorithm. So when we talk about neural networks, there's going to be many different parameters within here in kind of a complicated structure like the one I drew over there. And we're going to start by seeing what f of x is for linear regression later today. There's also two subcategories. Two subcategories of supervised learning, regression and classification. This is really going to just refer to the nature of your labels. So if your labels are continuous, it's regression, and if they're discrete, we'll call this type of problem classification. Okay, now let's also talk about unsupervised learning. So even if you haven't heard of this distinction before, you may be able to guess. I said in supervised learning, we have to have labels. So if it's unsupervised learning, I can write my data set in a very similar way. I'm just going to have data sets that don't have labels. And in this case, I still want to see what kind of structure can I uncover about this data set. And there's kind of lots of different subtasks of unsupervised learning, which we'll talk about when we get to it a bit later in the course. But for now, let me just kind of say a general overall goal of that field in general. So what I can kind of say as a summary of this field in general is that we want to kind of learn how we can represent the data sets underlying probability distribution in some way. And this field is really important because a lot of times in real world applications, we're not always going to have labels that kind of explain to us what our data is representing. So the last category of machine learning is reinforcement learning. We're actually not going to cover this in this course. But a few years back when this course ran, we did have a couple of lectures on reinforcement learning by Bogdan Kolchitsky. So if you want to go back, there are a couple of lectures on Pearsa about reinforcement learning if you want to learn a little bit more. I think actually I posted some notes on the portal from that some Sci students typed up together from when the course ran a few years ago. And in there, there's included some notes on reinforcement learning, I believe so. But I'll just kind of quickly say at least one sentence about it for completeness. So in reinforcement learning in general, you define an environment, and there's some notion of a reward that you want to maximize that exists. And you want to navigate through, take actions within this environment so that you maximize this reward. Okay, so let me just kind of tell you, based on this kind of introduction, what you can really expect in this course. So we're going to start by talking about supervised learning. That's going to be the first kind of 7 lectures of this course. Then there's going to be discussion of various unsupervised learning methods. I will give some of those lectures, and we'll also have a guest lecturer to talk about generative modeling. That's going to be our TA, Mohammed, actually. He'll give one lecture on this. I'm also really excited. Something new that I'm excited to learn about as well is we're going to have a discussion about the ethical implications about developing this type of technology. So we're going to have some guest lecturers from the Quantum Ethics Project at the University of Waterloo come for one of the lectures in the last week of the course. And this is actually going to be a joint lecture with the Quantum Information course. So it'll be all of you plus students in that course as well. And we're also going to try to we're going to kind of build up a toolkit throughout this course and talk about some of the early research that was done at the intersection of physics and machine learning. And then at the very end, we're going to have Roger Melko come and kind of give us an overview of kind of how that research has evolved over the last few years. And then there's a few points that are kind of still to be determined within here, but this is kind of a general idea of what to expect. Any questions? Okay. So let's kind of move into discussing supervised learning in a bit more detail then. Um, So I kind of said before, you can think of supervised learning in two categories, regression or classification. Let's think of a kind of simple regression example to start. So one task that you might not be used to calling it supervised learning, but we can call it supervised learning, is imagine you're given some data set, and then you have some function with some parameters that you want to fit, and then you somehow, I'm not saying this is necessarily the best one that we could choose, but maybe for whatever algorithm that I was using, this is what it output. And so and of course, here I'm giving a nice example where I can actually draw it on the board. A lot of the examples we're going to actually write code for in this course are going to be with a very high dimensional data sets where it's not so easy to actually visualize how this is going on. But here's a nice case where we can actually draw something. Okay, let's see another example. Okay, so if any of you have tried a machine learning tutorial online that's kind of introducing you to how to use a neural network, one common tutorial that you often start with is classifying handwritten digits, if you want to think about the realm of classification rather than regression. So again, we think of our data set like this. In this case, the x data points are images that somebody has actually drawn by hand. And what we want to be able to do is kind of say, okay, what's write the text corresponding to this. So for example, if I write like a 2, we want the output label to be 2. But of course, you know, this can become complicated because not everybody writes numbers in the same way. So, you know, I might draw one like this. Another person might be asked to do this, and they might draw one in a different way. They might also draw it just like in the corner of the box or something like that. And the goal would be that in either case, we still get one as the output label here. So the goal would be to train a computer so that in the future, if we give it data that doesn't have labels, it would still be able to tell us exactly what numbers are in some sequence of pictures. Okay, so now for the rest of the course, let's actually talk about some examples within the realm of many-body physics that we are going to write code for within this course. So let's start by talking about the Ising model, because when you do a course that has anything to do with statistical physics, there's always going to be Ising model in there. Okay, so have you guys, I guess you guys studied the Ising model in your statistical physics course, right? What are some features of the Ising model that you remember? Yeah.
It undergoes a phase transition.
Uh-huh. In what dimension, do you remember?
It's because of a temperature change.
Yeah, a temperature phase transition. Yeah. So so in our course, we're specifically going to be, I'm going to show you an example where we actually visualize this phase transition in two dimensions. But yeah, so it depends on what dimension your system is in. But you're right, it does undergo a phase transition for sure. Yeah. So I'm going to write that on the next slide. Yeah, what else? Anything else interesting? Long entanglement, cool. Yeah, in a quantum Ising model. This one is just a classical Ising model, so we won't have any entanglement here. But you're right, you can also do some interesting machine learning studies of a quantum Ising model that would have entanglement. So let me just kind of define the notation here. My Ising model just has discrete degrees of freedom. So these spin variables are just going to be up or down. And on a computer, I'll just store those as 0 or 1. And here, the notation here is that this is a sum over the nearest neighbors. You can also consider an Ising model that is not just the nearest neighbor one, but this is the one that we're going to use because we have some nice code for it. OK, so we can examine this model using a few different types of algorithms. So let me just tell you kind of a few different ways that we could look at this computationally. OK, so the first application we could look at is classifying phases within this model. So as we heard, in two dimensions, the Ising model has a phase transition. You can show it's approximately at 2.269 in units of J. And so if you're below this critical temperature, you're in the ferromagnetic phase in this model. It's called the paramagnetic phase. And so we can actually analyze this type of setup, very similarly to the handwritten digits problem. If we write their data set, like this, in this case, rather than being an image of a digit, the x data point is going to be the vector storing all of the spins in your lattice, and here is the number of spins. And your label in this case is just going to be two options, either ferromagnetic or paramagnetic. And on a computer, we would probably store this as something like 0 or 1 or minus 1 and 1 or something like that. So, and with the data we generate, even though this phase transition only exists in the thermodynamic limit where we take n to infinity, we're going to have to study some finite data sets. So imagine I put one in like this. It's going to be, if it's a two-dimensional icing model, I can look at it as a picture like this. And maybe the input that I have is something like this. Here the notation is going to be that if it's a white pixel, this is going to represent an upspin. And if it's a colored in pixel, it's going to represent a downspin, which I would store as a 0. So if something like this was my input, what label would you expect for this data? Ready? It's either going to be ferromagnetic or paramagnetic. Is this familiar from the course you guys have seen?
Sorry, what was the question again?
The question is, if this is your icing model configuration that you have on a 2D lattice where the empty squares represent an upspin and the colored ones represent a downspin, what label would you expect in this setup? It's either
mostly positive, it's just around 1.
Right, yeah, you're right. The magnetization is around 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then the label that you would expect is?
Paramagnetic.
Ferromagnetic. So ferromagnetic is at low temperatures when you establish an order parameter and your magnetization is non-zero.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that's okay. It's just like a question of definition. But yeah, you had the right idea that magnetization is what you would calculate. So basically summing all of the values of these spins. So this would be 0. Again, we have some preference in spin. So either we're going to have a spontaneous symmetry breaking as we lower the temperature here. So we're either going to, the system is either going to choose to be mostly up or mostly down. And this is called the ferromagnetic state. So we would hope that we could train a model so that if we give this as input, the output would be ferromagnetic. Whereas if I give it an input where it's kind of more random, maybe like approximately half are up and approximately half are down, like this, then I would hope that the label I would get as output here would be paramagnetic. And this is going to be something that you're going to write code for in homework one, specifically using a type of neural network. And this was an application that was studied by Roger Melko and Juan Carrasquilla, who both contributed a lot to the material in this course. Kind of one of the early and exciting papers that came out several years ago that was kind of really looking at how you can use machine learning and neural networks within the field of many-body physics was kind of studying this problem. So we'll reproduce some results from that paper. And it's on the portal as well. Okay, so you guys are really quiet. I never know if you're quiet because it's boring, you know all of this already, or because maybe you don't remember some of these details from statistical mechanics, or maybe you didn't see them in statistical mechanics. Just is there anything that you want to say feedback-wise? Is it just kind of, it's clear, or this is like?
It's clear.
It's clear, okay. It's like, you want it to go faster. Is that the point, or?
No, you said it's clear.
Yeah.
I think it is said that, so in the case of the Ising model, the non-trivial part here is because the data set is going to be really limited. Because in principle, I guess if you know if each spin configuration fits ferromagnetic or paramagnetic, it seems like we solved the entire problem.
Yeah. That's a great point. Yeah, so I should have said that because that's really fundamental. So you're right. We're not learning anything new about the Ising model by doing this. What we're really doing is we're building up a toolkit. So the idea is that we would learn how to use these tools. In this case, the one you're going to use in the homework is a neural network. So the idea really is that you'll develop these techniques of how you use a neural network. What we're going to do is I'm going to give you a data set. We're already going to know all the labels for that data set, but you're going to pretend that you don't know them, and then you're going to see how well can these algorithms do at this, right? So there's lots of different parameters that you can choose when you define these neural networks, depending on how you choose them. Sometimes it's going to work really well to learn the Ising model, and sometimes it won't. But building up that intuition on a case where you know the answer, and you can actually say, oh, I got, 96% right, and in this case, I got 80% right. It's going to help you to kind of learn when you maybe someday the ultimate goal is to be able to look at a more complicated model where you don't know the answer. But you're right, we're not learning any new physics here.
So by the more complicated model, Hamiltonian, what would this data set look like?
So I guess in this case, so the idea is that you would want to have a data set where maybe you know the labels for some subset of data. Maybe you have some, I'm trying to think of an actual example where this would happen, but I can think of a lot of examples that are outside of physics, but it's not easy to find labels, right? Like we maybe have to do some complicated analysis in order to figure out what the phase is. So maybe we can do that for some small subset of data, but we can't do that for too much. So we get some limited data set that does have labels and we train based on this. And then maybe then after that, we want to apply it to a bigger data set that we have access to that doesn't have labels, and then we can still use the model that we've developed there.
I see.
That's a great question. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Okay, let's just look at one more example, which is the one we're going to study in this afternoon's tutorial. So I kind of talked about the setup of a problem that's classification. So the labels in this case I drew were just 0 and 1, just discrete options. We can also consider another problem, which is regression. So in this case, we're going to look at the same model, although, kind of the idea is that we pretend we don't have all of that knowledge of the model, and we just see how good these methods are at recovering that. And another thing you can do is we're going to see several different supervised learning methods. You could try using various options for these different problems and see which one works the best. So again, in this example, the X data point that I give is still going to be a spin configuration. But in this case, rather than thinking about phases, my labels in this case, if I could choose to let them be the energy. So we're going to, again, the idea is not to learn new physics about the Ising model Hamiltonian. We already know what it is, but we're going to pretend that we're given this data set and we don't actually know where it came from. We don't know what Hamiltonian was used to generate it. So what we could do is we could assume a more general model, which is kind of the function that we're going to fit to in this regression algorithm. Where we're, instead of looking at only nearest neighbors and assuming the coupling is uniform, let's just kind of slightly generalize this. We'll look at all possible combinations of spins and say that the coupling can be anything for every pair. So the question now becomes, can we determine this matrix of couplings by using some kind of a regression algorithm? So this is what we're going to study with code this afternoon in a tutorial. So in the second lecture that's happening at 11:30, I'm going to show you a specific supervised learning method and that we can apply it to many problems, but we'll see that it can succeed at this problem in particular. And we'll study how it does that in the afternoon.